This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We have quite a few things to catch up on before we get to today's show. First, I want to tell you that there is a benefit for Kate Bornstein. Kate Bornstein has been a guest on this show and is a major, amazing gender theorist, author, playwright, performer, who's currently battling cancer. And so this Sunday, June 15th, there is a big fundraiser to help with her continued fight and battle against cancer. It's at the Cutting Room in New York City. So if you are in New York City or thereabouts, you should go online, get tickets, show up, support Kate. It's got a whole bunch of amazing performers. You can find out all about it by going to the URL bit.ly/loveforkate. That's the number four. So bit.ly/love4Kate. You can get all the info there. You can buy tickets, and we will also post that link on our Twitter feed and on our website. Coming up next week, Good Vibrations, which, as you know, is the presenting sponsor for this show and is a major supporter of me and my work, is celebrating International Strap-On Week. That's right, people. If you have not marked it down already, please get your calendar out and mark down that June 16th to the 22nd is International Strap-On Week. And of course, Good Vibrations is celebrating with lots of things like free classes, in-store and online promotions, and a really cool social media contest. So the contest starts on Monday, and what you do is you take a strap-on selfie, which is exactly what it sounds like. You put a strap-on on, you take a selfie, and you post it to Twitter or Instagram next week using their Twitter handle at GoodVibesToys and the hashtags StrapOnSelfie and StrapWeek. There's a panel of celebrity judges. There is a slew of great prizes. Plus, you get to take a strap-on selfie. I mean, how fun is that? To read about the rules and the prizes and everything you need to know, and there are, in fact, rules, especially around nudity and genitals, so pay attention to those. Go to goodvibesblog.com/strap-on-selfie. goodvibesblog.com/strap-on-selfie. And while you're there, you can check out a vintage strap-on selfie of me. A really well-known sort of iconic Tristan strap-on photo, which was taken for a photo shoot for The Village Voice and appeared there. And it was done by Richard Mitchell. So technically it's not a selfie, but please just bear with us. And it's from like almost a decade ago, but it's a classic. So you definitely want to go see that. Okay, so the other thing I want to tell you is that we're live today, so you can give us a call. You can talk to me and you can talk to my guest. And once you hear about who it is, you're going to want to talk to her. Please trust me. You can call us at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. Remember, if you call and get on the air, you win a prize from Sports Sheets. It's just that simple. You call, we answer the phone, You ask a question, you win a prize. Now, one of the most common questions I get asked is about how to raise sexually educated, aware, and empowered kids in this day and age. And first of all, that's a great question. But it doesn't exactly have a kind of a nice, quick, neat answer, because there's a lot of issues for kids these days in dealing with issues around sexuality. So today we're going to spend the entire hour digging into this very question with an expert on the topic. Let me tell you about her. Dr. Logan Levkoff is an ASECT certified sex educator and an internationally recognized expert on sexuality and relationships. She received her PhD in human sexuality, marriage, and family life education from NYU. Dr. Levkoff is a regular contributor to television shows including Good Morning America, The Today Show, The CBS Early Show, Nightline, Fox News, and CNN. She's also the host of Cafe Mom show, Mom Ed, In the Bedroom. She's the author of 3 books, Got Teens, The Dr. Mom's Guide to Sexuality, Social Media, and Other Adolescent Realities. Third Base Ain't What It Used to Be, What Your Kids Are Learning About Sex Today and How to Teach Them to Become Sexually Healthy Adults, and How to Get Your Wife to Have Sex with You. These all seem like really important topics, people. Dr. Levkoff has been a spokesperson for Trojan and serves on the Trojan Sexual Health Advisory Council. And for over a decade, she's been teaching groups of all ages and from a variety of backgrounds. She has designed and implemented sexuality education programs, faculty development, and parent education in many different schools, universities, medical schools, and community organizations. Dr. Levkoff's work with teens and parents has been profiled in numerous publications, including the New York Times. I am thrilled to have someone who orbits in my sexual education circle frequently, but who I rarely get to sit down and talk with, which isn't that always the way. So welcome to Sex Out Loud, Logan.
Thank you, Tristan. I'm delighted to finally be here.
I feel like the title of your second book sort of says it all, which is Third Base Ain't What It Used to Be. And man, at the risk of sounding old, and you and I are contemporaries and peers, I just feel like that is true. That is true on so many different levels.
It was hysterical when in coming up with that book and that title. It was based on working with hundreds and hundreds of teens and the way they described. And I'm not suggesting that whole baseball, you know, diagram analogy metaphor works, but they kept repeating these things that just didn't seem familiar to my own life. And at the time when they were saying it, I wasn't that much older than some of my students. And I thought, man, you know, not only have things changed, but the perception of what counts as sex and what you do and how you do it has clearly changed too.
Yeah. And it seems to me the landscape of what's going on and how much access kids have to sexual material and ideas and information, and when they're starting to experiment sexually, it all seems to be happening at a younger and younger age. I mean, do you feel that even like a generation or so removed, that the teenagers you're talking to now just are more sexually savvy, or actually do they know just as little as we did, but they're being pressured? I mean, where has the shift taken place?
It's funny because I think that we have so many salacious headlines that just vilify adolescent sexuality. And the fact is those headlines aren't true. I mean, they're not based in anything real. Yes, we certainly have some sexual health challenges, but you know, the average age of first intercourse for both boys and girls still hovers right before one's 17th birthday, contrary to what, you know, those headlines would have us believe. I think that we've sort of forgotten that experimentation and curiosity is such a huge part of adolescence. So their access to sexual imagery and media has changed, but the desire to fit in and make sense of your new body and these feelings hasn't changed. That's always been there. And I think sometimes we forget because it's been so long since we've been there that was the case. But adolescent sexuality can be this wonderful, wonderful time in one's life if they have the tools and the self-esteem in which to go through this period in their lives.
Which is part of what you address in your newest book, which you co-authored with Dr. Jenna Wider. And that one is called Got Teens, The Doctor Mom's Guide to Sexuality, Social Media, and Other Adolescent Realities. And I want to read a quote from early on in the book. You write, even though my children are not pubescent yet, I'm acutely aware of the need for them and their friends to develop a healthy, positive sense of self. I see it going on in the classrooms regularly, grotesque slang references to body parts, language that perpetuates a vicious sexual double standard, jokes, often inadvertent ones, about being, quote, gay. I cringe at the thought of others sabotaging the work that I've been doing with my son and daughter since they were born. However, I know that our ongoing conversations will always be a good litmus test to identify the competing and questionable information and values that they encounter. So, I mean, that's part of what this book is based on, is that you're a sexuality educator, Jenna's a doctor, but you're both also moms. And your mom's at different stages, your kids are at different ages, which is a really fascinating sort of dynamic. But you paint a kind of a bleak picture in this one paragraph of like what it means, you know, to be a teenager, although it's a realistic one.
Yeah, and I have to say the goal of the book is really to be optimistic. I mean, you picked up on a very poignant paragraph and one that's certainly, you know, elucidates the challenges that we have. But I think that those are the challenges that whether you're a sex educator or not, if you're parenting or caregiving at all, you have, which is, you know, how do I manage what I've told my children with what a couple of kids on the back of the school bus are telling them? And that was the same with me too. I mean, I remember learning a lot of choice words and phrases mm-hmm. on the school bus as a kid and practicing them with my parents who were not really all that pleased. But you know, I do. The reason we wrote this book was really to empower anyone who has any young people in their home, that you have the opportunity and you have a responsibility to raise sexually healthy kids who will evolve into adults and to teach them to feel good about their bodies and to challenge the awful messages that are out there. Because if we don't do it in our own homes, then they don't develop the skills to do it outside our homes.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems so critical. I mean, one of the things that struck me as I was reading this book was that you both like take your jobs really seriously as parents on this particular issue. Like it's not enough for you to say we're going to feed our kids like healthy, you know, food and make sure that they do their homework. Like you guys are really hardcore about when anything comes up about sex, I must answer the questions. I must model good behavior. I must not be embarrassed. Like I must give good information. I mean, it seems like a little exhausting and I think daunting probably to the average parent. But do you feel like you have to be vigilant about this stuff?
You know, it's interesting. I don't find it exhausting at all. I just feel like that's part of what I do. And it's very natural for me to talk about everything as it comes up. I mean, my son is 9 and we had a conversation the other day about why he couldn't watch the Law and Order marathons with me when I was escaping to my, you know, my cave. And we talked about the issue of rape and consent and I defined it for him. And I said, listen, it's not that you can't see these things. It's that, you know, I want you to see sex portrayed as something positive and loving and consensual, and that's not the images that I want you to get. Now, this was on a walk home from school. It wasn't a conversation I was planning on having, but it just evolved. And if I had ignored the question or changed the subject, I would have missed this really beautiful moment in which I could share my values and also teach my son how to be a respectable human being, too.
Okay, that's a really good point. Okay, we need to take a break. But the questions are already flooding in. Thank you, listeners. You never disappoint me. And I want to remind you that, you know, if you don't all have laryngitis, you can also call us. And you can ask your questions directly to Logan, who, as you can see, has thought a lot about this because she wrote a whole book on it. You can call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. Let's take a break and hear from our fantastic sponsors, including Astroglide. Astroglide has an entire line of lubes, and I am guaranteeing you there is one for you. So go to astroglide.com, get a free sample, check out all they have to offer. When we come back, more questions about how to talk to your kids and your teenagers about sex. So stay with us.
Looking to add something fun and different to your sexual experiences? Then try Astroglide X, premium silicone personal lubricant. Astroglide X contains a unique blend of high-quality silicones that provide a silky smooth experience unlike any other. Astroglide X is also waterproof and perfect for water play. Not only does Astroglide X last longer than all water-based products and is hypoallergenic and latex safe, it's even great for massage. For more information and a free sample, visit astroglide.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today we are talking with an internationally renowned expert on sex and relationships, Dr. Logan Levkoff. And before the break, we started to dig into her latest book, which she co-authored with Dr. Jenna Wider, called Got Teens, The Dr. Mom's Guide to Sexuality, Social Media, and Other Adolescent Realities. And one of the things that strikes me about this book, Logan, is that it's really jam-packed with information for parents, which, you know, reminded me of this notion of like, when you go to dog training classes, they're actually not training the dog. They're actually training the owner, right? to teach the dog stuff. And so I'm wondering if you think that that's kind of our first line of defense, because one thing that really I feel like comes up again and again, even with my own peers and my own sex positive people in my life, is that, you know, our parents weren't, for the most part, comfortable with sex ed. They weren't given any information themselves. And they kind of passed on that lack of resources as well as their own discomfort with sex education to us. Mm-hmm. So how do we break that cycle?
Well, we acknowledge it. I'm a big believer in sort of acknowledging the elephant in the room, which is, in this case, discomfort, and saying to your kid flat out, look, I know this may be uncomfortable for us to talk about. My parents never talked to me. I mean, I think that we often come off as being sort of, as caregivers, judgmental, or we're disciplinarians. And when it comes time to having these conversations, it makes it more difficult because our young people in our lives are already expecting that we're going to finger point and wag and not have a meaningful conversation. So part of it is not just acknowledging our discomfort and being okay with it, but also thinking about what our values really are as they relate to these issues. There's nothing more challenging than talking to a kid or a teenager at whatever stage of life if you don't really know what your values are about issues of sex and sexuality. And also, if you have a parenting partner, if you're not aligned with their values too, it makes it near impossible for a young person to distinguish two different and competing values.
And when do you start to talk to your kids about sex? I feel like people ask me that question all the time.
Birth. and I mean that totally seriously. And mostly because I think we have this idea that in order to have a meaningful conversation about sexuality, we have to talk about like heterosexual sexual intercourse. And I think that's bullshit, quite frankly. I mean, when you talk about gender and different types of families and body parts and you know, when kids are playing together, all of those conversations are conversations about sexuality. And when you lay the groundwork that way, it makes the actual conversation about sex behaviors much easier because you've already started to talk about these things. So I'm serious when I say birth. And I have to say, Tristan, I really hate hypocrisy immensely. And whatever I share, whether it's with you and your audience or just any group that I work with, there's nothing that I share that I haven't done or don't do in my own home. So all of these things I'm telling you, I have my two sex ed guinea pigs, you know, in the other room. And they are very good, well-rounded young people.
No, and I think that that's, you know, it's fascinating because you do have these kind of little people to experiment on, but also to kind of bounce ideas off of. You know, people ask me all the time about my own background and my own sex education because I think that they assume if I'm this, you know, radical sex positive adult that I, you know, I came out of some radical sex positive household, which I absolutely did not. But one thing that I'm reminded of when I was like reading your book was that for my 100th show recently, I had my mother on my show as my guest, and it was live. And we did not go over what we were going to talk about and what she absolutely couldn't talk about beforehand. And so she actually told this crazy story that was really embarrassing about me masturbating when I was really young. But what, and so my friends tease me about it for weeks and continue to do so. But one of the things that I've always felt is like once I discovered masturbation and once I was caught masturbating, like in, you know, at someone else's house, like not an appropriate place, she never freaked out about it. And so I'm wondering if like, if that's one of the places where it starts is how do we kind of address masturbation like from the get-go as a thing that's not shameful, but that's really amazing and you should do plenty of, but then also kind of set these boundaries around it, which I feel like can be sort of contradictory for kids.
Yes, very very confusing.
Yeah.
So I think there are three different issues. I sort of have this complicated relationship to the word private and privacy when we tell kids, you know, that should be private. As it relates to their body, also as it relates to masturbation, because I think if you get yourself into the head of a young person, especially someone who's really little, they hear private, and private is synonymous with secretive. So I see it all the time when I'm trying to do classes with, you know, elementary school students on reproductive and sexual anatomy and getting them to diagram and to talk and you know, talk about puberty. And when you've told kids these things are private, these are your private parts, we don't talk about them, we don't share them, you don't show them to other people, and then all of a sudden someone like me comes into a classroom and says, of course the vulva is a beautiful place and we should talk about it.
Right.
And they're like deer in headlights, they flip over the paper, they're rolling their eyes at me because this is the antithesis of what they've been told for so long. So it's not really a surprise that they respond this way. So that's my issue with the word privacy. I would rather us talk about masturbation and bodies as things that are beautiful and unique and personal. But private seems to often send the wrong message, at least from my vantage point. But I remember when my son was, God, he was a couple months old. And I remember him on the changing table, and my daughter too, for that matter. And I remember, you know, him touching his penis and him having an erection. And he like looks at me with this like gooey, sweet smile. And I said, yes, honey, that's your penis and that's an erection. And one day mom won't be standing over you when you have one, you know?
Right.
So they're silly, kind of funny things. But this idea that his body was important or that my daughter's body was important is, has always been there. We've always used language. And that, I think, is the biggest thing, too, is that there are a lot of people, and certainly more with, you know, biological females than with males, where we totally ignore that girls have genitals or sexual anatomy at all. Mm-hmm. Right? So we have these slang terms. We have these juvenile terms. I am like the language police. And there is nothing better than hearing my mother with my daughter in a bathroom talking about vulvas. Like, it's the greatest, greatest thing, because I never thought I'd hear it.
Well, and there's a great story in your book, by the way, about your son coming to you and asking you like a really explicit question and saying, well, what about if the penis got near the vulva? And I was like, okay, hold the phone.
Yeah.
He said vulva. And
yes.
It's like not even 10.
Yeah.
Which
he's been saying it since as long as he can talk. And that's what we should be doing. I think that I remember Bill O'Reilly years ago doing this segment where he thought that children couldn't hear the word uterus. And I thought, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, it's an actual body part. Like, when did this become a bad, scary word? So I think that language around bodies can be really empowering, so that when you do talk about things like masturbation or different types of sex or just, you know, anything relating to genital and reproductive health, it becomes much easier to do when they know these words exist already.
Yeah, and that they're not dirty words.
No, not dirty. And that there's pleasure to be had in our bodies. And then really, once you know your body is capable of pleasure on its own, you don't seek it out from an, you know, unworthy partner.
Well, I want to remind everyone that we're live, and I know you've got questions about talking to the kids in your life. So whether you are a parent or whether you, like me, are the cool aunt who will be fielding all the questions about sex, I think, I mean, given who I am, I think that'll happen. You should give us a call, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. We've been getting your questions also on social media and by email, and so I'm definitely going to fire those off to Logan in a later segment. You can also post them on our Twitter feed at Sex Out Loud Radio or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. I think this is a good place to just take a break before I want to fire off some of the questions that you answer in your book, which are surprisingly detailed and provocative. I will just say it. I mean, I'll just tease it right there. They're just, some of these questions are really straightforward and like, definitely everyone should know that. And then some of these questions hit you and you're like, whoa. So there's a lot more to cover. But let's take a break and you can hear from our sponsors, including Good Vibrations. I told you all about the strap-on selfie contest, which I'm really excited about. That contest starts next week on Monday and goes through Friday. And in the meantime, you can go to goodvibes.com and you can use the coupon code Tristan for 15% off your order. So coming up, I want to tackle some of the most racy questions in this book and find out just what Logan has to say about topics you would be surprised are in a book about teens and teens and sex, I think. So stay with us. More Sex Out Loud with Dr. Logan Levkoff when we return.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than 3 decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at 6 retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education Series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are talking with Dr. Logan Levkoff about her newest book, Got Teens, The Doctor's Mom Guide to Sexuality, Social Media, and Other Adolescent Realities. And before the break, I promised you some provocative questions. But so let me just first say that one of the things about this book that feels really accessible, easy to read, and organic is that basically, the two doctor moms are responding to real questions from parents about certain situations with their kids that have come up and kind of how to handle them. And the one thing that struck me about this format was, wow, you know, kids really will initiate conversations about sex with their parents, even if they do it indirectly. They're really hungry for knowledge. Like, the questions that they ask these parents and put towards these parents were like really deep and thoughtful and intense. They were not softball questions in many cases. Did that surprise you, some of the questions that you have been asked and that you chose for this book?
No, it doesn't surprise me. And I last day of school was today, but I work with hundreds of teenagers every single week, and we really don't give young people enough credit. You know, we think that they're incapable of hearing things about sex and sexuality. We think they're not capable of making smart decisions. And it's just not the case. They can be super thoughtful. They live in a world where they have access to so much information and sexual imagery. They're trying to process it just like the rest of us. So if they don't ask, then they can't possibly get good information, or at least know where to look. So they're far more thoughtful than the world lets on, which is really hopeful in a lot of cases.
Well, I picked some of my favorite questions, in some cases because of the question itself, in others because of the answer that you gave, and then in some cases it was both or just that I thought they were interesting. So my first question is from page 92, and it is from a parent who says, "How will my child know how to use a condom?"
Ah, I love this question. Because you're going to show them how to use a condom. Yes. And everyone kind of says, what?
Yes. This is one of the moments where I realized, like, Logan Levkoff is a crazy, radical, sex-positive, feminist warrior. And she has just lulled you to this sense of, like, oh, this is just like having a conversation with my friends, and I'm not going to feel any pressure, and this is really accessible, and everything's going to be fine. These people are totally normal in quotes. And then you say, oh, you're going to show your kid how to use a condom. And I'm like, hold the phone.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
And I have to tell you, this hasn't just been like done in my own home, but this was done actually to me by my parents too. Now, I grew up in Long Island at this weird blip of a moment in the 80s and early mid-90s when everyone was talking about HIV/AIDS. It was an indiscriminate virus. And even if parents had never talked to you about sex before, they were talking about condoms because it was an issue of life or death. And in this little blip, my parents became very active in HIV and AIDS fundraising and developing peer HIV and AIDS education programs. And unbeknownst to my sister and I, my younger sister and I, one day after school, we came home and waiting for us were my parents with two condoms and two bananas. And they said, this is how you use a condom. Always use one. And next week you go to peer training. And I was 15 at the time. And I looked at them and said, okay. And I don't think they would have ever imagined that would be my foray into this world. But it definitely was 100%. But I think that we like to think that sex ed is really just about talking. But it's more than just facts. It's about evaluating decisions and being, you know, critical of the world around us in a constructive way. And it's also about skill building, which means regardless of gender or orientation, knowing how to use a condom correctly is a skill that we should all have, because at some point we may choose to use one. Hopefully many of us do use them regularly. And it's just an important thing. It's a health product. And I mean, I remember my kids seeing me with like hundreds of condoms all over the floor a few years ago. And I think they were like, I don't know, 2 and 6 or something like that. And they asked me, Mom, are you giving out prizes in class today? And I said, no. And then I said, wait, yeah, sort of. And I talked to them about what they were. I said, you know, a condom is something that a man, in this case, they were male condoms, that a man wears over his penis to prevent germs from, you know, being passed back and forth to someone's body, and it prevents pregnancy. And I said, you want to know anything else? They're like, no, that's cool, bye, you know, and walked away. So skill building is important, and the research about condoms is really extraordinary, that parents who talk to their kids about condoms, their kids are 3 times more likely to use one the first time, and first time use correlates with using them. Sorry, this is...
That's okay.
Go figure.
You're like on call. It's like 8:30 on Friday night, and people have questions for Logan.
Sorry, and if you use it the first time, it makes someone 20 times more likely to use them regularly. And that all comes from parent-child conversations about condoms. So the research is really on parents' side. And if we take the sex part out of it and think that condoms are a symbol of health and respect and responsibility, then it's much easier to do the modeling.
Mm. Well, another one of my favorite questions comes much later in the book, and I love it because of both the question and the answer, which I'm going to read and then I'm going to let you comment on. And the question was, my daughter's friends are engaging in beauty contests on Instagram. I think it's awful. How can I convey that to my daughter? And your response is, confiscate her iPhone, hit it with a hammer, and move to Amish country.
The truth is, that was Jenna's line. I can't take credit.
Oh, okay.
That was definitely Jenna. And mostly because she has, at the moment, a 12-year-old girl who is, a 12-year-old daughter whose peers are engrossed in this at the moment. So yes, she would like to take a hammer to her kid's phone. You know, I sort of feel like all of these things, even the not so great things, are great opportunities for us to talk about where we get our self-esteem from, what it really means to be beautiful, why on earth we need to feel like our physical self needs to be validated by total strangers on the internet. You know, those I think are gems for me in terms of talking with people. They just open up a world of dialogue, and it's a great way to get a sense of what the young people in your life, what their values are and where their peers are and what they're considering and how they feel about themselves. So, I mean, yeah, sure. Social media presents certain big challenges, but it also provides us with some unbelievable opportunities.
But what do you say about using technology. I mean, what strikes me about so many of these questions is they're about things like, you know, texting and Facebook and Snapchat and how all of these modes of communication interact with our sex, our sexuality, our relationships. I mean, where do you steer people when we know everyone is on Facebook? When one of the questions in your book was, my daughter and her boyfriend only text each other. They never speak on the phone. Is that weird? I mean, it's a valid question though, right?
Yes. It is. And in the case of that particular relationship, I think it's important for all of us to understand that, you know, aside from being in a long distance relationship where you don't really have any other option in terms of communication, but now of course we have Skype and iChat and all those other things, relationships also have to take place face to face or on the phone as opposed to texting them and LOLing and emojiing them. And especially for young people who, if you've never had an experience of having to be vulnerable face to face, then that's really challenging when they become adults. They can't do it either. I mean, with respect to technology as a whole, I always tell groups of parents who ask me panicked with panic, what about all the sexting we hear about? Now, I mean, first of all, the sexting epidemic is not an epidemic, contrary, again, to magazine and newspaper headlines.
Yeah, you really dispel that myth. And, I mean, and you put forth some statistics that just totally fly in the face of this kind of media panic that everyone is sexting and everyone's having like oral sex parties. I mean, right. You guys set that straight pretty much, you know, throughout the book.
Good. I'm glad. And I also want people to remember, it's not a surprise that young people would use their technology or whatever's accessible and available to them in order to express their sexuality. I remember, do you remember those like 1-800 or 1-900 chat lines before like the days of chat rooms? I mean, I remember my girlfriends and I sitting on my floor in my bedroom in the sixth grade and we called those lines and we said some really just, you know, provocative, awful things. We did, you know, because that was what we had accessible and we were trying to figure out, well, how do we explore our sexuality without having to do anything? So it's not a surprise that kids and teens want to use their technology. So we can't vilify them for that. We can just help them make smarter decisions because, I mean, look, I made plenty of mistakes as a young person, but I'm never worried that they're going to, you know, show up and bite me in the ass all these years later. And I feel badly for young people today because they don't have the same freedom.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's an interesting point you make in the book, which is, have we always used whatever technology we could to express ourselves sexually? Yes. But, you know, we would talk on the phone and no one was like recording our conversations and no one was texting and then sending out to the rest of the school. I mean, it seems to me that the consequences, the stakes have been raised. The consequences are far different than, you know, than getting on a chat line and saying something dirty and seeing like sort of how it goes over.
Yeah.
People, you know, get on Instagram and say something dirty and it's a whole other story.
And I think that as parents and caregivers, we need to explain that it's not that we, you know, want to lock the doors and take all of their technology away from them. It's that we expect them to experiment. We expect them to explore. But we really want to teach them how to avoid any potential negative outcome. And unfortunately, they don't know that yet. You know, and that's the sad part. I don't want my kids to not have any experiences throughout their lives. I just want to protect them from any long-term outcomes that are too hard for them to manage.
Well, and I also think, you know, there's something about social media which gives us permission to sometimes push past our own boundaries. And I think this is where we see when people are bullying people or being really mean to people. You know, I'm convinced that if they were face to face and they had to say those things to someone right to their face, they might think twice.
Absolutely.
But they can go on Facebook or they can create this fake profile and then they can really taunt their fellow classmates. And it seems like it's ratcheted up. I mean, I feel like someone who, you and I had opposite experiences. You talk very frankly in the book about being one of the first people in your class to get boobs, right?
Yeah, they haven't grown since then, just so you know.
Well, and I had the opposite experience, which is that I was a very, very late bloomer. I did not get my period until I was almost 17. And I was so tiny. I mean, I was like 5 feet tall, 90 pounds. I mean, to the point where when I saw people I went to high school with kind of 5-6 years out of college, people actually asked me if I got a boob job, which, of course, everyone in my life thought was hysterical because they were like, no, those are totally her breasts. But they're like, but she looked like a tiny little stick figure. In high school, I was like, yeah, it was just a delay. But I was teased mercilessly for that. I mean, I can remember the exact conversations and the exact like names people called me and the exact horrible things that people said to me, as you did when you were sort of one of the first people to hit puberty and people were making these like really sick and outrageous jokes about you and calling
soccer ball tits, which is endlessly funny because there's no resembling soccer balls whatsoever.
No, I mean, those are big. I was like, I don't think she has soccer ball. I guess it's all relative in a kid's mind, but I was like, I've seen soccer ball. I've seen even natural soccer ball, but I don't think Logan has soccer ball. But these are like really intense experiences we have that I feel like we do hang on to. And so when those get ratcheted up or become more public, where it's, you're not just saying it in a slumber party full of six people, you're saying it to the whole school on Facebook. How do we counteract these messages from kids' peers?
I feel that first in our own homes we have to have sort of zero tolerance policies for a lot of the things that we see. My kids know that if they ever bully anyone, make anyone feel badly for who they are, what they look like, who they love, they wouldn't because they live in this sort of like rainbow colored world. But since they could talk, they knew we would take away every single thing that they own if we ever found them doing anything. And we taught them how to be upstanders, not just bystanders, but people who stick up for those around them and who get an adult, who stand up for what's right, who fight for social justice. And I think the more we teach kids to do those in their own small circles, the bigger those circles get.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We need to take another break. Coming up though, you guys have sent me some fantastic questions. I have the best listeners on the planet and your questions for me say it all. They're so fucking thoughtful and smart and complicated. And I know Logan is up for the challenge. So let's take a break, hear from our sponsors. And I want to say that when the young person in your life is ready for their very first vibrator, you know what's a good choice? The WeVibe Tango. Go to WeVibe.com to find out about all the different things about this mini vibe that makes it a great first vibrator. So stay with us. We've got your questions coming up in the Ask Tristan segment. And in this case, it's Ask Logan Levkoff. Stay with us.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe, share the pleasure.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than 3 decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at 6 retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education Series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I am having a blast talking with my guest, Dr. Logan Levkoff, about her new book, Got Teens? The Dr. Mom's Guide to Sexuality, Social Media, and Other Adolescent Realities. And let me tell you, people, this book is phenomenal because it really does tackle everything from mundane basic questions about body hair and deodorant and puberty to things like, what do I do if my kid comes home and says they want a bikini wax? Or how do I handle my kid's questions about gender identity? I mean, there's questions about depression. There's a section about abortion. Logan Levkoff does not fuck around, people. And this really is just, I feel like it's a necessary book for anyone who has any young people in their life who may come to them with questions about sex. So you sent in some great questions about sex. I want to get to as many of them as possible. If I read your question, remember, you win a prize from Sportsheets. All you have to do is tell me what you want from Sportsheets and give me your mailing address, and I will send it to you. And it's just that easy. So we're going to start with Julia on Twitter, who says, I have two teens. The oldest is very open with me and asks a lot of sex questions. She asks very specific questions. She gets into details. My younger son doesn't. I open the door to make space for questions, and he says he has none. Do you have any tips for raising and talking to kids with such different communication preferences? Because I really want to instill my son with sex-positive values.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great question and a common one. Our kids are not always the same. Some, we do have some that are very open and others who are far more closed off. But I think that it's okay still to be the parent. And if there are things you want your kids to learn from you about sex and relationships, then it's important to sit down and say, I understand that you have no questions or you don't really want to have this conversation, but this is part of my job as your parent. Or, you know, and I love you, and I need to have this conversation with you because I don't want you ever growing up and wondering why I didn't talk to you. So, I mean, it's sort of simple. I mean, and direct. You have a moment where, you know, you tell them the things that you want to tell them and say, you don't have to respond. You don't have to ask me any questions, but know that the door is always open for us to talk. You know, because years could go by and one day they're going to say, well, they never talked to me, right? I mean, because that's, they don't see it the same way we do. They remember very little unless you do lots of conversations. So I think it's not just about one thing. It's about answering little things. It's about picking up the cues from their media, what they're seeing, having little conversations that all wind up piling up to a one giant conversation about sex and sexuality.
This one comes anonymously from email. I have an 8-year-old who's asked me about what sex is twice now, and I give a simple answer, and I told her we would talk more about it later. I know we need to have, quote, the talk with her, and I'm trying to prepare what to say. I grew up only getting 2 talks from my mother, one at 9 years old with basic definitions, and one at 18 years old when I was getting ready to leave for college, where she said she hoped I would save it for someone special. I went online to find progressive sex ed materials, and now I'm realizing that I probably should have been having more talks with her sooner. I feel more nervous now than before, like I messed up by waiting too long. We're also discussing getting her a cell phone in the fall for limited use, and I'm worried about how best to talk about things like internet porn. Like, bringing it up will make her go look for internet porn right away. Right now, she uses our home computer in our living room while we're at home, and I don't think she knows about all the sex online, but I'm probably being naive. Please help.
Okay, two different issues. First of all, it's totally fine if you haven't said anything before, because today is a new day and you have a new opportunity. I think anytime our child asks a question about anything pertaining to sex and sexuality, we have to ask them how this came up. I mean, is it something they were talking about at school? Did they hear it from an adult? Was it something on TV? Because that'll help you craft your answer best. And also to answer back, you know, what do you think sex is? And just to, again, get a sense of what they know. And maybe they know more or less than we think. But I'm a big believer in being factual. Right? I mean, it is perfectly okay to say, you know, sex means lots of different things, but sex can mean when a man puts his penis into a woman's vulva and vagina. And they will say, oh, really? Or won't be surprised. And you can say, this is something that, you know, grown-ups do when they really care about each other. And it's something, you know, it's something wonderful. And if you ever have any other questions, please ask me. So my philosophy is sex positive, factually correct, challenging the double standard at all times, and teaching ownership of voice. So giving your child the freedom to ask questions and speak up for themselves as they grow up.
Okay, I want to get to a final question. We are running out of time, but I have a daughter who is 14 years old, and she's always identified as straight until a girl she was friends with kept trying for more, and she eventually fell for her. Luckily for all my children, I've been very open about sexuality, bodies, etc. Where I'm stumped is how to lay boundaries with my daughter. When she first entered the relationship with this girl, she was worried about what it would mean about her sexuality, and I told her it would be one of 3 things. One, you're straight, but you just happen to connect and click with this one person who happens to be female. 2, you'll discover you're bisexual as you get older. Or 3, you'll discover you're a lesbian. But at 14, you don't really have to worry about figuring all of this out. The girl and my daughter are involved. She's very sweet. She's very polite. And we're learning that she's from an abusive home life, including 2 younger sisters that constantly harass her because they don't accept who she is. And her mother kind of turns a blind eye to the sister's harassment. So she spends a lot of time at our house because she can be herself and she feels more comfortable and more safe. Now, we watch them like a hawk, and as far as we know, they've only made out. But the other girl's mom was out of town recently, and her sisters were being really difficult, so we let her stay over a couple nights. Here's where I'm getting confused, because everyone says, oh, this is great, your daughter's a lesbian, well, she won't get pregnant. But sexuality is a lot more than that, and I feel like if she was dating a boy, I wouldn't let him sleep over. But I do let this girl sleep over. And so how do I set boundaries and lay down the law while still providing this girl, the girlfriend, a safe haven?
Well, look, teenagers who are in a relationship, whether you know you're home or not, will find moments where they can sneak around and be together sexually, whatever that means to them, for whatever sexual orientation or identification of the couple. I'm a big believer that I don't want my children having sex of any kind with their partners in the home when I'm there with the door shut. mostly because I don't want to be that intimately involved in their lives, and I don't think it's respectful to their partner for their partner to know that their partner's parent knows that they're doing something behind a closed door. So for me, it's really just an issue of respect and teaching, and in this case, teaching your daughter that, you know, her girlfriend isn't going to stay in the room with her because you should value that relationship, and an intimate relationship should be intimate and respected and private, and I don't want to be involved in them. And that way, you know, they don't have to be in the same room. You know, you can set up your boundaries but still provide a safe place for this young woman who clearly needs a safe place.
Yeah, no, it's a great answer. Thank you so much, Logan. I'm sorry I had to rush you off, but we are totally like way past time, but there was just so much to cover.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm really glad we finally had an opportunity to do this.
Yeah, Dr. Logan Levkoff is the author of Got Teens, The Doctor Mom's Guide to Sexuality, Social Media, and Other Adolescent Realities, published by Seal Press. Find out more about her at loganlevkoff.com. Follow her on Facebook and Twitter at Logan Levkoff. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guests will be Diane and Jacob Anderson Minchell, authors of the new memoir, Queerly Beloved, A Love Story Across Genders. Until then, go on facebook.com/asktristan or on Twitter at sexoutloudradio. Take some time in your own life to talk about sex, especially with the young people you know and love and take care of. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.